Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is time for the Daily Dive for April 10th, 2024. We start off with the part four of the Jennifer Lopez interview from 1998. The interview that just keeps on giving. You know, yesterday I was doing part three, and it's a, you know, on the website, it had four pages, and I was thinking, oh, you know, the fourth page might be pretty short, so maybe it's only going to be three parts. I'll just add it on to the one I did yesterday. Nope. Full on. It is from Movie Line. Like I said, it's from 1998. The reporter is Stephen Rebello, who, if you have never read Real Art book, it is one of the best ever on Hollywood. And he also wrote some books on Alfred Hitchcock and stuff, but the Real Art one is great. Okay, on with our interview. And see, I'm not a good example because I'm not normal. I sure wasn't normal at 23 when I was on television and making more than my mom and dad. It's hard for me to find normal contemporaries, and it's hard for men to deal with. The man I've married is Latin, and they, more than any other type of man, are very macho. I always joke with him because he's like, you can see through that dress, or is there going to be a love scene in the next movie? You're my wife. I don't want anybody to think of you in that way. It's just a sweet thing, but I go, look, the love scenes, the see-through dresses, all that stuff's good. As long as people like you, they're going to keep coming to see your movies. Do you want that house in Miami? Yes or no? I mean, this is what it's going to be. It's part of the business. I remarked to Lopez, but there's a long, nasty history of husbands and lovers of sexy Hollywood stars who decided that if stuff is part of the business, they want no part of the business. Oh, honey gets it, though. But I have to say, if you asked him right now, he'd rather have me home washing dishes, with us living in a small apartment, with him making the money rather than me making millions of dollars a year, living in a house that I mostly pay for. It's tough for me to try and show him that even though I make a lot of money, I feel I still need him. She's struggling with this one. Her feeling for her husband and awareness of the inequities of their situation are palpable. I also perceive that although the sassy, swaggering Lopez wants to soar higher, she does, like any other mortal, have her insecurities. What scares her? I have fear about the weirdest things. I've always had a huge fear of dying or becoming ill. The thing I'm most afraid of, though, is being alone. Huh. How about that, you guys? And I'm not reading this in advance. The thing I'm most afraid of, though, is being alone. That kind of fits with she's never alone, which I think a lot of performers fear. It's why we seek the limelight. So we're not alone. We're adored. We're loved. So people want to be around us. The fear of being alone drives my life. Growing more pensive and uncharacteristically still, Lopez mentions some of the new problems and limitations her growing fame has imposed. Demands on her time. A shrinking sphere of privacy. Being suspicious of people who suddenly want to get to know her. I have to say the kind of upbringing I had, getting beat up a little bit, growing up with all different kinds of different people, is the best upbringing for show business. The people who grow up softer, who don't have what it takes to really survive in this business, that's why you find so many people on drugs here. Although she stresses that she's battled no such problem, she admits, it gave me a lot of anxiety when I began to get so much more recognized. It was like, what the hell have I done? Have I made a deal with the devil here? This stuff of people invading your life, like when you're eating at a restaurant or just walking around, it freaks you out. You're like, I don't want that person coming up to me to ask for an autograph. But if you're stressed, you attract it even more. It's just easier not to fight things so much. Just effing go with the flow. It's easier just to sign the autograph quick instead of turning it into a bigger thing. Now I step back and go, hey, I'm from the Bronx. I'm tough. And I'm not going to let this get to me. Other things have got to her, though. Having your life judged in the press is a tough thing. She admits, alluding to the published reports, for instance, that her contemplating divorce practically days after she and her husband exchanged vows. It was in the paper and all over the Spanish news reports that he was throwing things at me, that I was throwing him out, that he was asking me for money. I was like, where do these people get these stories from? My husband's mother actually called from Cuba, where they don't even get news all the time, saying, what happened? Are you guys getting a divorce? Dealing with these things is tough, but nobody sympathizes with you. And when I was on the other side, I didn't sympathize either because I'd be like, what the hell is she complaining about with her Gucci shoes and her Dolce fur? Riffing on how she's been treated by the press, Lopez declares, there are certain people that are marked for death already. I have my little list of journalists that have treated me unfairly. Like, I was totally happy, totally confident with my work in Selena. But out of the 700 reviews, and I read every single one, I can quote the one who said, the one thing you don't do when you walk out of this movie is say, who's that girl? I was like, you lying bitch. When another person from that same magazine came up to me, the first thing I said to her was, you tell that other bitch that writes for your magazine that I'm never talking with her again. I definitely have my list of people that are going to get their justice. For all her love of playing the diva, does Lopez ever take to the diva behaviors that make one loathed by co-stars? She shakes her head in a defiant no, observing, just because I know my strengths doesn't mean I have a huge ego. The one thing I cannot tolerate in Hollywood is this trickle effect of every single person, from the top with your studio guys pissing on whoever is below them. Nobody can say that I treat people like that ever. When it comes to my work, I am an ogre because I want it to be so good. I won't do interviews. I don't want people bothering me. I need my time, but that's the only thing anyone can say about me. When I ask about her career strategy, she says, I've already started mapping that out. You've got to do your share of commercial movies, romantic comedies, action movies, the $100 million movies, because if you don't, you're not going to have the power, and Hollywood's not going to respect you. I would also do any small independent movie that appeals to me dramatically, because it keeps everybody realizing that your acting chops are there. I think some actors are making a big mistake by doing one big commercial movie after another. It just looks like you're for sale. People want to know that you're selective. Unable to say enough about how swell a time she had working with Oliver Stone, Lopez declares they're actively discussing a rematch. She adds that the director suggested she do a major stage revival of West Side Story with the hope that they could later pitch a movie musical remake. There's a hitch, though. I would love to play Anita, but since Maria's the star role, I would have to play her too. She'd also like to play a character who's neither Anita nor Maria, someone who is, in other words, not Latina. Oliver was talking with one of his co-producers on this new movie project he's preparing, and they mentioned an actor they think I'd make a great couple with. Oliver talked about the female role in the movie being perhaps for me and said maybe the character could be Latin, and I said, whatever you do, don't make the character Latin because you're thinking of me to play it. When the other producer said, let's make her Greek, let's make her Italian, I said, you know, I have the chops to do that, Oliver. And he took a few minutes to get there, even after I played an Apache Indian in his movie. I said, I want to be the Latina actress, but I also want to go beyond all that. I want to change things, or at least I can start that change. Lopez has no compunctions about admitting she's grasping for the highest rung of stardom she can possibly attain. I ask, had you been around in the old Hollywood days, when stars were publicized by the studios as the It Girl, the Oomph Girl, and the Cherry Blonde, what would you have named yourself? The first thing that came into my head was the Butt Girl, because that separates me from everyone else. I love my body. I really, really dig my curves. It's all me and men love it. Some guys like skinny girls, but they're missing out. When a dress is on a woman, it shouldn't look like it's on a coat hanger. So many girls here are so thin. In fact, nobody else in Hollywood really has my type of body. My husband calls it La Guitarra, like the shape of a guitar, which I love because that was always my ideal woman growing up. So call me the Guitar Girl, or maybe the Wow Girl. So ends the interview. Speaking of Latinas, got a tip from, you know, my Camila Cabello person. I think they tried to make it as a blind item or whatever, but they didn't write it. It wasn't going to work. A Cuban singer based in Miami just released a song that's not doing great, but just got branded by high-profile alcohol brand. She has another song coming, and they're not the greatest expectations for her album. But the album's going commercial 100%, despite the edgy, independent spirit image she's trying to sell as her rebrand. She's just as ambitious as ever and is hungry to do whatever it takes to get back on top. You remember, she's not very loyal to friends, producers, or former band members. The singer was quick to dump her former group for her projects right before they released their second album back in 2015. She's not liked in the industry, nor does she have close personal friends in the industry, so she stays in Miami. She's preparing to be the opening act for this big artist she's been linked to. Yes, she will be doing festivals, TV appearances, and a few one-off shows, but she'll be the opening act for this way bigger artist on a leg of their tour. Unless the label is willing to do payola, invest massively in her rebrand and likability goes up, she's not headlining an arena or big tour on her own. The alcohol brand is counting on her to pull in Latin customers since she's from Cuba and considered Caribbean. However, she can barely speak Spanish, doesn't have a large Latin base, and failed to put a Latin audience when she sang in Spanish. She has a 2-year contract with the brand now and will have to do the work. And we all know she can be lazy and struggles to take care of herself and keep the weight down. But this time she's desperate for a comeback since she's 27 and pop career's over and this is her last chance. However, the brand didn't do their research. Before the pandemic, she spent years saying in interviews she didn't want to be considered a Spanish artist and only did a few songs in Spanish because the industry was so hungry and the global charts were dominated by Latinos back in 2021 and 2022. She's been losing followers on social media, almost 2 million, in the past 5 months. Also losing are the people who wanted to go to BravoCon. You knew, I guess, I don't know, it wasn't the biggest shock to me that they decided not to have it this year. They're going to make it next year, but not just next year, November of next year. That's a long time, you guys. I mean, that's almost 2 years from now. And, you know, last year they had 27,000 people show up. They had 160 Bravo celebrities. So the network's going to do, oh, watch party by Bravo kind of things online. They couldn't have it. Everybody would be asked about Andy Cohen. There's too much drama at Bravo right now behind the scenes. I think that what they're hoping is that things will have played themselves out. It would not shock me if in November of 2025, they debut a new Andy, somebody who's going to do Watch What Happens Live. It would not shock me if it's somebody like Kate Chastain. So I think that they're like, okay, we can't do it this year. Everybody's just going to be talking about all the lawsuits and stuff. Everybody's going to be talking about how we treat people horribly. So let's wait. Okay. Not waiting any longer is Kevin Costner talking about Yellowstone. He hadn't really wanted to talk about it at all. But he said, look, I'm anxious to get back on the Dutton Ranch. I'd like to be able to do it, but we haven't been able to. I thought it was going to make 7 seasons, but right now we're at 5. So how it works out, I hope it does. But they've got a lot of different shows going on. Maybe it will. Maybe this will circle back to me. If it does, and I feel really comfortable with it, I'd love to do it. And says it's up to Taylor. This is Taylor's thing. I said as much to him a while back. I thought how it could happen, but we just have to see. And apparently his contract has a moral death clause. So he has some say and input on how Dutton could be killed off. And he's allowed, you know, general ways he's allowed to die. It prevents him from getting written off in a shameful or embarrassing way. Okay. Let's see if he comes back. Attempting to make a comeback is JoJo Siwa. Not the good JoJo. I like the good JoJo. Her career was derailed. I'm going to go back and do the Aaliyah thing. Aaliyah. Oh, screwed over my JoJo. Anyway. JoJo Siwa. She was on Call Her Daddy. And I felt like it was kind of a mess. But she was talking about her girlfriends, and she was talking about them and her relationships in a blind item kind of vague way. And she says that Kylie Prue, who was her first, says, look, she's my good partner, who's my ex, but is my good friend. It feels like that's the only person that she likes. And we kind of got the sense that it was likely Prue who helped JoJo come out publicly. And she did refer to her as my girlfriend while talking about the night that she decided that she wanted to go public. And that things were more serious than Prue than the fans even realized. JoJo said that she was actually fully living with her. But again, she didn't name names. We're just kind of having to try and figure this out. But she said her girlfriend was 16 and she was 9 months older. Can you imagine at 17 years old and 16 years old living together? And she said, I don't know how it happened. Said, you know, it's probably because of COVID. She came to California and then I was like, don't leave. 2 weeks turned into 4 weeks, turned into 8 weeks, turned into 9 months. Then we were a married couple at 17 and 16. We had to break up. And her mom, JoJo's mom, said, you know, I should have never allowed my 16-year-old's partner to live with us. That was not healthy for you, JoJo, much less her and her family. Someone should have put their foot down, but no one at the time felt it was right to. That sounds like when Miley Cyrus had Justin living with her when she was like 16, right? Or was she 15 or 16? I can't remember. Just a really bad idea. And then JoJo started talking about another ex and that she had to get her security team involved and stuff. And it is a wide, sprawling interview. But again, she doesn't name any names. So you have to go back and you have to listen to it and then go, okay, well, who was she dating about that time and stuff? And has she told us every girlfriend's name? Are we missing somebody? It's very scattered. Well, Rashee Rice, the Kansas City Chiefs player, the one who was involved in the crazy mess in Dallas with the cars and the accident, is now officially has a warrant out for his arrest. The Dallas Police Department said in a statement today that he is facing one count of aggravated assault, one count of collision involving serious bodily injury, and six counts of collision involving injury after he admitted to driving one of the cars. He was driving the Lamborghini. The man who was driving the other car, the Corvette, Theodore Knox, also has an arrest warrant. I'm going to talk about royals, but I'm not going to talk about Meghan and Harry, but I'm going to talk about British royals. So Peter Phillips, the son of Princess Anne, nephew of King Charles, and his girlfriend Lindsay Wallace have ended their relationship. They made their relationship public at the Platinum Jubilee weekend in 2022. And been together for 3 years. Everybody always uses the term reportedly been together for 3 years. And apparently the split was amicable. They were friends before the relationship blossomed, but Peter and Lindsay have gone their separate ways as the relationship simply ran its course. Now, they had originally met at school, where Wallace, Lindsay, was friends with Phillip's sister, Zara. And they reconnected at a school reunion, and it says, after Peter's divorce from Autumn Kelly in 2020. Last I checked, Peter and Autumn Kelly didn't get divorced until 2021. So we have what I like to call a very murky timeline. I'm guessing that Peter's divorce from Autumn Kelly happened because of Lindsay Wallace. That's just my guess. And Wallace and Phillips were first photographed together at the joint christening of Zara's son in November of 2021. So had to make sure that the whole Autumn Kelly thing was officially over and signed, and then they could make their debut. I'm just saying. Now, if you want to see a wedding, Katie Price is probably going to give it another shot. Her fourth time. I feel like she's been married 20 times, but it's really, she's only been married 3. But she wants to get married to JJ Slater. He was on Married at First Sight in England. He's 14 years younger than Katie. But Katie believes that JJ could be the one. He's told her that he loves her. She's told him that she loves him. She said that she would marry him tomorrow. He wants a massive wedding, and Katie agreed. I don't know where Katie gets all her money from. I'm assuming yachting and drug dealing or something like that. But she wants to walk down the aisle. They would have a massive party. And she said, yeah, I'd love to get married. And she said, to the people on the outside, it does look like I've jumped into a relationship quickly. Yeah, you have. You were just with the drug dealer dude not that long ago. But what people don't realize is that we've been in contact for 3 months. I've done it properly, and it's different to any other relationship I've done. It didn't even start off like that. It literally grew from friendship to fancying each other to now this. That's very sweet. I feel like I could probably go back and look at the other 9 times she's been engaged, and she's probably said the same kind of thing. Running out of things to say is Suge Knight. On his latest podcast, he kind of alludes to the fact that Snoop might have had something to do with Tupac's death. And Suge said that Snoop convinced the members of the Dog Pound not to go to Las Vegas for the Tyson fight because Snoop knew something was going down. But Nate Dogg decided he was going to go, but Snoop warned Nate Dogg to watch his back, not be around the Death Row folks. And Suge also said there was no one connected with Death Row who would have called Snoop to let him know that Pac had been shot. So Suge wanted to know why Snoop would have been listening in. I don't know. I really do feel like Suge's running out of things to say. And next week, he could say, oh, somebody else killed Tupac. It's like he knows that if he mentions anything about Tupac's death, that people will pay attention to Suge that day. people are not paying attention to the Jonas Brothers for very bad reasons. If you have been reading the blinds, you know that I've been talking about the Jonas Brothers probably canceling their tour. The ticket sales haven't been great. They've been like canceling things here, right, and left. And now they have postponed their European leg of their tour. It said, "We appreciate your love and support so much. We know this is a bit inconvenient, but we can't wait to share more about what's coming." They said that the concerts are being postponed due to scheduling conflicts. I think the tickets, the concerts are being postponed because nobody's buying any tickets to the concerts. You can't just reschedule tour dates without giving an explanation. People are traveling all over. They've hotels, airfare. Those aren't refundable. Yes, the tickets later, yeah. I just, you know, you can't do that. But they're not as popular as they were. Speaking of popular, Blair Witch. So Blumhouse is going to do a Blair Witch Project revival. And, I mean, Blumhouse is the, you know, that's the place to do it. They're the ones who did Paranormal Activity and The Purge and stuff like that. I think they've had like $6 billion that they've generated at the box office. But The Blair Witch, man, that movie, to me, you guys, 1999, right? Fictional story of three student filmmakers who hike into these hills near Maryland in 1994 to film a documentary about a local legend known as the Blair Witch. They disappear, but their equipment and footage are discovered a year later. Originally, the budget was going to be $35,000 to $60,000, but then when they sold it, the post-production knocked it up to about $500,000. But it made $250 million. Okay. The poster for that movie is probably one of my all-time favorites. I clearly remember in the movie theater, before it came out, like many months, you know, they put up the posters to tease you. And that face with the hat on. And when it said in October of 1994, three student filmmakers disappeared in the woods near Burkittsville, Maryland, while shooting a documentary. A year later, their footage was found. They had me sold. It's 1994. We don't have internet. You know, 1999 and what comes out, yeah. I'm trying to remember the movie that I was attending where I saw the poster. But I remember seeing it. I was totally suckered. I thought, oh my gosh, this is... it suckered me in. All right, the blind items revealed. Number one's from April 1st. The foreign-born three-named actress used to always talk about the movie she liked, so she was either lying then or lying now. And that's Millie Bobby Brown. Number two is from April 1st. This A-minus list singer, solo and in a group, thinks if he gets a divorce, there will be a horrible fight over custody. He's already watching that play out close to him, so doesn't want more of that in his life. That's Nick Jonas, Priyanka Chopra, Joe Jonas, and Sophie Turner. Number three is from April 1st. What you didn't hear the still very young A-list singer tell the fans of the A-plus list singer, but has been telling everyone in her circle for the last few weeks, I have an Oscar and she doesn't. And that's Billie Eilish and Taylor Swift. Number four is from April 2nd. The hard-to-spell model has been in this space for her lousy company. Apparently things are even worse than we thought. The company's on the verge of bankruptcy and the employees are being screwed over. And that's Emily Ratajkowski. And number five is from April 2nd. Pretty random that some paparazzi would show up in Costa Rica to catch the A-minus list singer who hasn't had any good music in a decade. Maybe she should focus on the music and not getting snapped with the new boyfriend. And that's Ellie Goulding and Armando Perez. And that's it for this one, you guys. I will talk to you later.